When we think about engineering failures, we usually picture something huge, an external force.
Yeah, hurricane, an earthquake, something big and obvious.
Exactly. We think the threat has to be massive. But today, we're going to the complete opposite end of that
We're
scale.
going atomic.
We're going atomic. We're looking at a threat that is, for all intents and purposes, invisible. And yet, you can bring down the strongest structures we can build. We're talking about hydrogen.
Element number one, it's a great paradox, isn't it? The smallest, lightest, simplest thing in the universe.
Taking down our strongest materials. And this isn't a new problem. This idea of hydrogen embrittlement has been around for, what, 150 years?
Oh, easily. And the thing is, as we push our materials to be stronger, higher strength, bigger loads, the problem actually gets worse.
It's the Achilles heel.
It really is. It's the Achilles heel of high-performance steel.
Which brings us to the source material for today's deep dive. We are getting into a PhD thesis by Joachim Octavalentine-Dyess. It's from the University of Cambridge.
And the title is The First High-Strength Bainitic Steel Designed for Hydrogen Embrittlement Resistance.
It sounds dense, and it is, but the story here is, well, it's a quest.
It really is. It's a quest to engineer a steel microstructure that doesn't just resist hydrogen, but actively manages it. It's about building a trap.
An atomic level trap, and the stakes are very specific. He's focused on what are called sour environments.
Right. So for anyone not in, say, the oil and gas world, that means you're dealing with hydrogen sulfide, H2S.
Nafty stuff.
Oh, it's nasty stuff. And the corrosion reaction from it basically pumps atomic hydrogen right into your steel. And if that steel is under stress, which it always
A
is,
pipeline, a bolt.
you get what's called sulfide stress cracking.
And that's the nightmare. It's not a slow failure, it's sudden.
Brittle. Catastrophic. The metal just snaps, no warning. So the goal of this whole thesis is to stop that, but not with a coating or something superficial.
No, he wants to change the steel itself, the fundamental architecture of the alloy.
Exactly. Using a specific type of steel called bainite.
Okay, so before we get to the solution, let's just make sure we understand the enemy. Because this isn't like rust, where something is eating the metal from the outside.
No, it's an inside job, total internal sabotage. The hydrogen atom is just a proton and an electron. It is so tiny.
Impossibly small.
So it diffuses through the iron lattice incredibly fast. I mean, we're talking orders of magnitude faster than, say, carbon or nitrogen.
The thesis mentions it moves through the ferrite phase. That's the body-centered cubic structure. It moves through that like a ghost.
That's a great way to put it. The BCC lattice has these sort of open channels, and hydrogen just zips right through. It can even do quantum mechanical tunneling.
Just pop from one spot to another.
Pretty much. And once it's inside, that's where it does the damage. The thesis talks about two main theories, HEE and HEL-LP.
Right. HEE is hydrogen enhanced decohesion, which is. It's like it's unzipping the iron atoms, right? It just lowers the energy needed to pull them apart.
That's the decohesion theory, yeah.
Right.
It weakens the bonds directly. But then you have HELP.
Hydrogen-enhanced localized plasticity.
And this one's a little more insidious. It finds the defects that are already in the steel, the dislocations that let metal bend, and it makes them move easier.
So instead of stress being spread out, it all piles up in one tiny spot.
And that spot gets soft, deforms, and eventually crack. So whether it's unzipping the bonds or creating these soft spots, the end result is the same. The steel loses its ability to stretch. It becomes brittle.
It just breaks. And here's the kicker, the reason this research is so important. With our normal high-strength steels, like tempered martensite, you hit a wall.
The strength ceiling.
Exactly. The stronger you make it, the more susceptible it becomes to hydrogen. It's this trade-off we've been stuck with for ages.
And Dias is trying to break that trade-off by using a different material, by using bainite.
So what's the difference? Martensite is what you get when you cool steel down really, really fast, a quench.
Right. You quench it,
Yeah.
you freeze the carbon in this highly stressed state. Bainite forms a little slower at slightly higher temperatures. You let things rearrange just a little bit.
And he's focused on lower bainite.
Yes. And this is key. You get these incredibly fine plates of ferrite. But the carbides, the hard bits, they precipitate inside those plates, not at the boundaries between them.
Which makes it tougher.
Naturally tougher. But he didn't just want a tough steel. He wanted one with a built-in defense system.
The two-pronged defense. I love this. It's so clear. Strategy one is the barrier. Strategy two is the mousetrap.
Okay, let's do the barrier first. This is all about playing with the different phases of steel. So we said ferrite is a superhighway for hydrogen.
The BCC structure.
But there's another phase, austenite, which is face-centered cubic, FCC.
A different arrangement of atoms.
Totally different, much more tightly packed. So hydrogen likes being in there. Its solubility is high, but its ability to move, its diffusivity, is incredibly low.
So if ferrite is a highway, austenite is a rush hour traffic jam.
Or a dense jungle. It takes forever for hydrogen to get through. The idea is to leave some of that austenite in the final steel to act as an obstacle course.
But it can't just be little islands of austenite, can it? The thesis talks about this percolation threshold.
This is the critical insight. If you only have, say, 5% austenite, the hydrogen just goes around the islands.
Smart little atom.
Physics is lazy. It always finds the easiest path. So what Dias did was use computer models to design an alloy that would stabilize just enough austenite to form a continuous connected network.
The percolation threshold.
That's it. The theory was that once you get past about 10%, the islands of austenite link up. They form a labyrinth that runs through the whole material.
So the hydrogen is forced to take the slow road. It has to go through the jungle.
Exactly. It dramatically increases the tortuosity of the diffusion path. And the data showed it worked.
Mm-hmm.
When they got the austenite up to 18%, the hydrogen diffusivity just dropped like a stone.
So defense won. A success. We built a maze that slows the enemy down. But you can't keep it out forever.
Not in a sour environment. Eventually it gets in.
Which brings us to defense too. The mousetrap.
Right. This is the idea of trapping. A trap in materials science is just a spot in the microstructure, a defect, a boundary, a particle that acts like a little energy well.
Hydrogen atom falls in and it gets stuck.
It needs a certain amount of energy to get back out. We call that the binding energy. And the deeper the trap, the higher the binding energy.
And Dias wanted to use carbides for this, specifically iron carbide, cementite.
Fe3C, yeah. But this is a huge gamble.
It really seemed like it. Reading the background, the scientific literature was all over the place on whether cementite was a good trap.
All over the place is putting it gently. It was a mess. You saw reported binding energies from like 11 kilojamol up to 66.
That's an enormous range. 11 is a speed bump. 66 is a black hole.
It's the difference between useless and fantastic. So Dias's hypothesis was that if he could control how that cementite formed, get it inside the bainite plates really fine, it would act as a strong trap.
Okay, so he designs the alloy, he cooks it up, he gets this beautiful microstructure with the percolating austenite barrier.
The structure looked perfect. I mean, the lowest carbide fraction ever reported, really precise distribution, everything looked right.
And then the big test, they use thermal desorption spectroscopy, TDS, to actually measure the trap strength.
Okay.
Can you just walk us through how that works?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. You basically charge the steel up with hydrogen. Then you start heating it very slowly and precisely. As the temperature goes up, the hydrogen atoms get more energy.
Enough to escape the trap.
Enough to escape. And you have a sensor that detects the hydrogen as it comes out. By measuring the temperature at which it escapes, you can calculate how tightly it was being held, how deep the trap was.
A shallow trap lets go early. A deep trap holds on until it gets really hot.
That's it, exactly.
So they ran the TDS. They measured the binding energy for his carefully engineered cementite traps, and the number was?
37.5 kilojamol.
37.5.
Which is right in the middle of that big, messy range from the literature.
So is that good enough? Is 37.5 the magic number?
Well, in this field, we tend to classify traps as either reversible or irreversible, and 37.5 kilojamol at operating temperatures. That is a reversible trap.
Reversible. Meaning the hydrogen can check out whenever it wants.
It's not a permanent prison. It's more like a waiting room. The hydrogen sits there for a while, but if conditions change, it can hop right back out into the lattice.
And if it's back in the lattice, it can find a crack tip and cause the steel to fail.
Precisely. It delays failure, but it doesn't prevent it.
And the mechanical test proved this, right? The big NEC industry standard test.
Yeah, the gold standard for sour service. They took this beautiful alloy, which passed all the normal strength and ductility tests.
Great elongation, met all the strength targets.
Everything looked good. Then they put it in the corrosive solution under stress.
And it failed.
It failed. Sulfide stress, cracking. The traps just weren't strong enough. They got saturated. The hydrogen became mobile again and the steel broke.
Now, when you hear that, your first instinct is to say, well, the experiment failed.
Oh.
But the whole point of this deep dive and the analysis of the thesis is that this was actually a huge scientific success.
Absolutely, 100%. You have to separate the immediate industrial goal from the scientific discovery. He proved the percolating austenite barrier works. That's a win. And he settled a decades-long debate.
We now know The number for cementite is 37.5.
We can stop arguing about it. And we now know that 37.5 is not good enough for this specific, very harsh application. That is an incredibly valuable piece of information. It tells the next person, don't go down this road, you need a better trap.
So what is the better trap? If cementite is the waiting room, what's the supermax prison for hydrogen?
The thesis points the way. You need to look at alloy carbides, things made with vanadium or titanium.
Vanadium carbide V4C3 was mentioned. Why is that one so much better?
It comes down to defects within the carbide itself. Vanadium carbides often form with what are called carbon vacancies. So imagine the little crystal structure of the carbide is missing a carbon atom here and there.
A tiny hole.
A tiny hole that is the perfect shape and chemical environment for a hydrogen atom to fall into. And when it does, the binding energy can be as high as 116 kilojoule.
Wow. That's 3 times stronger than cementite.
That is an irreversible trap. Once a hydrogen atom falls in there at normal temperatures, it is never coming out. It is effectively taken out of the fight.
So the path forward is actually really clear. You take the benetic structure that Dias developed, you keep the percolating austenite barrier, because that worked.
But you change the recipe, you swap out the reliance on iron carbide, and you design it to precipitate vanadium carbides instead. You combine the barrier from this thesis with the super trap from other research.
It's like building a team. The goalie was great, but you need better defensemen.
Material science is almost never one single eureka moment. It's iterative. Dias built the architecture. The next person will put in the right furniture.
You know, I want to zoom out for a minute. We've been talking about oil and gas, sour service.
Mm-hmm.
But this whole problem of trapping hydrogen feels like it's about to become much, much bigger.
You're thinking about the hydrogen economy.
I am. We're talking about a future where we pump pure hydrogen gas through thousands of miles of pipelines, into homes, power plants, fueling stations.
It is a massive infrastructure challenge. If we have this much trouble preventing hydrogen from cracking a specialized steel in an oil well, imagine trying to make the entire global gas grid safe for pure hydrogen.
The pressure to solve this exact problem, this strength versus embrittlement trade-off, is just going to explode.
It is. And it's not just pipes. It's storage tanks, valves, compressors, everything. All of it needs to be designed against this invisible enemy.
Yeah.
And the work Dias did, particularly on that austenite barrier.
That could be a cornerstone.
It could be. Because even if the trap wasn't strong enough for sour service, that diffusion barrier is still a hugely valid strategy for just transporting hydrogen gas. Slowing it down is half the battle.
Okay, so to wrap this all up, we dove into a tiny atom that acts like a ghost, quantum tunneling through solid steel. We saw a researcher try to build a labyrinth and a mousetrap to stop it. The mousetrap turned out to be a little too weak for the job.
But the labyrinth held up. And in the process, we learned exactly why the trap failed, which is just as important as if it had succeeded. We basically got the blueprint for the next-gen alloy.
It just makes you look at a simple piece of metal so differently. It's not a solid thing. It's this complex battlefield of phases and boundaries and defects, all in a war against the smallest element in the universe.
And for 150 years, the smallest element has mostly been winning. But we're catching up.
Well, thanks for walking us through the atomic lattice today. It's been a fascinating look into the real bones of our infrastructure.
My pleasure. It's always fun to geek out on microstructure.
For everyone listening, thanks for diving deep with us. We'll catch you on the next one. Stay curious.